For our next story, we have the haunting of 657 Boulevard in New York. I'm pretty sure it's in New York, and it's about the Watcher. We're just going to get straight into it. One night in June 2014, Derek Broaddus had just finished an evening of painting at his new home in Westfield, New Jersey. When he went outside to check the mail, Derek and his wife, Maria, had closed on the six-bedroom house at 657 Boulevard 3 days earlier and were doing some renovations before they moved in. So there wasn't much in the mail except for a few bills and a white card-shaped envelope. It was addressed in thick, clunky handwriting to the new owner. And the typed note inside began warmly. "Dearest new neighbor at 657 Boulevard, allow me to welcome you to the neighborhood." For the Broadduses, buying the 657 Boulevard had been fulfilled a dream. Maria was raised in Westfield, and the house was a few blocks from her childhood home. Derek grew up working class in Maine, then moved his way up the ladder at an insurance company in Manhattan to become a senior vice president with a salary large enough to afford the $1.3 million house. The Broadduses had bought 657 Boulevard just after Derek celebrated his 40th birthday, and their three kids were already debating which one of the house's fireplace Santa Claus would use. But as Derek kept reading the letter from his new neighbor, it took a turn. "How did you end up here?" the writer asked. "Did 657 Boulevard call to you with its force within?" the letter went on. "657 Boulevard has been the subject of my family for decades now. And as it approaches its 110th birthday, I have been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming. My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s, and my father watched in the 1960s. It is now my time. Do you know the history of the house? Do you know what lies within the house, within the walls of 657 Boulevard? Why are you here? I will find out." The author's reconnaissance had apparently already begun. The letter identified the Broaddus' Honda minivan as well as the workers renovating the home. "I see already that you have flooded 657 Boulevard with contractors so that they can destroy the house as it was supposed to be," the person wrote. "Bad move. You don't want to make 657 Boulevard unhappy." Earlier in the week, Derek and Maria had gone to the house and chatted with their new neighbors while their children, who were 5, 8, and 10 years old, ran around the backyard with several kids from the neighborhood. The letter writer seemed to have noticed. "You have children. I have seen them. So far, I think there are 3 that I have counted," the anonymous correspondent wrote, before asking if there were more on the way. "Do you need to fill the house with the young blood I requested? Better for me. Was your old house too small for the growing family, or was it greed to bring me your children? Once I know their names, I will call to them and draw them to me. The envelope had no return address. "Who am I?" the person wrote. "There are hundreds and hundreds of cars that drive by 657 Boulevard each day. Maybe I am in one. Look at all the windows you can see from 657 Boulevard. Maybe I am in one. Look out any of the many windows in 657 Boulevard at all the people who stroll by each day. Maybe I am one." The letter concluded with a suggestion that this message would not be the last. "Welcome, my friends, welcome. Let the party begin." Followed by a signature typed in a cursive font, "The Watcher." It was after 10 p.m. and Derek Broaddus was alone. He raced around the house, turning off the lights so no one could see inside, then called the Westfield Police Department. An officer came to his house, read the letter, and said, "What the bleep is this?" He asked Derek if he had enemies and recommended moving a piece of construction equipment from the back porch in case the Watcher tried to toss it through a window. Derek rushed back to his wife and kids, who were living at their old home elsewhere in Westfield. That night, Derek and Maria wrote an email to John and Andrea Woods, the couple who'd sold them 657 Boulevard, to ask if they had any idea who the Watcher might be or why he or she had written. "I asked the Woods to bring me young blood, and it looks like they listened." Andrea Woods replied the next morning, a few days before moving out. The Woodses had also received a letter from the Watcher. The note had been odd, she said, and made similar mention of the Watcher's family observing the house over time. But Andrea said she and her husband had never received anything like it in their 23 years in the house and had thrown the letter away without much thought. That day, the Woodses went to with Maria to the police station, where Detective Leonard Lugo told her not to tell anyone about the letters, including her new neighbors, most of whom she never met, and all of whom were now suspects. The Broaddus's spent the coming weeks on high alert. Derek canceled a work trip, and whenever Maria took the kids to their new house, she would yell their names if they wandered into a corner of the yard. When Derek gave a tour of the renovation to a couple on the block, he froze when his wife said, "It'll be nice to have some young blood in the neighborhood." The Broaddus's general contractor arrived one morning to find that a heavy sign he'd hammered into the front yard had been ripped out overnight. 2 weeks after the letter arrived, Maria stopped by the house to look at some paint samples and check the mail. She recognized the thick black lettering on a card-shaped envelope and called the police. "Welcome again to your new home at 657 Boulevard," the watcher wrote. "The workers have been busy and have been watching you unload carfuls of your personal belongings. The dumpster is a nice touch. Have they found what is in the walls yet? In time they will." This time the watcher had addressed Derek and Maria directly, misspelling their names as Mr. and Mrs. Broaddus. Had the watcher been close enough to hear one of the Broaddus' contractors addressing them? The watcher boasted of having learned a lot about the family in the preceding weeks, especially about their children. The letter identified the Broaddus' three kids by birth order and by their nicknames, the ones Maria had been yelling. "I am pleased to know their names now. In the name of the young blood you have brought me," it said. "You certainly say their names often." The letter asked about one child in particular, whom the writer had been using an easel inside an enclosed porch. "Is she the artist in the family?" The letter continued. 657 Boulevard is anxious for you to move in. It has been years and years since the young blood you ruled the hallways of the house. Have you found all the secrets it holds yet? Will the young blood play in the basement? Or are they too afraid to go down there alone? I would be very afraid if I were them. It is far away from the rest of the house. If you were upstairs, you could never hear them scream. Will they sleep in the attic, or will they sleep on the second floor? Who has the bedrooms facing the street? I'll know as soon as you move in. It will help me to know who is in which bedroom. Then I can plan better. All of the windows and doors in 657 Boulevard allow me to watch you and track you as you move through the house. Who am I? I am the watcher and have been in control of 657 Boulevard for the better part of 2 decades now. The Woods family turned it over to you. It was their time to move on and kindly sold it when I asked them to. I pass by many times a day. 657 Boulevard is my job, my life, my obsession. And now you are too, Broaddus family. Welcome to the product of your greed. Greed is what brought the past three families to 657 Boulevard, and now it has brought you to me. Have a happy moving in day. You know I will be watching. Derek and Maria stopped bringing their kids to the house. They were no longer sure when or if they would move in. Several weeks later, a third letter arrived. "Where have you gone to?" the watcher wrote. 657 Boulevard is missing you. Many Westfield residents compare their town to Mayberry, the idyllic setting for the Andy Griffith Show, the kind of place where a new neighbor might greet you with a welcoming note. Westfield is 45 minutes from New York and a bit too slow for singles, meaning the town's 30,000 residents aren't largely well-to-do families. This year, Bloomberg ranked Westfield as the 99th richest city in America, but only the 18th wealthiest in New Jersey. In 2014, when the watcher struck, the website Neighborhood Scout named it the country's 30th safest town. The most pressing local news of late, according to residents, have been the temporary closure of Trader Joe's after a roof collapse and a rampant scourge of unconstitutional policing, which meant they mean aggressive parking enforcement. Westfield is 86% white. One activity all locals recognize as treacherous is trying to buy a house. There's a lot of money and a lot of ego. One resident who requested anonymity after discussing Westfield real estate told me, "I've seen bidding wars where friends lost by $300,000. The Broaddus' house was on the boulevard, a wide tree-lined street with some of the more desirable homes in town. As the watcher had noted, the boulevard used to be the street to live on. You made it if you lived on the boulevard." Built in 1905, 657 Boulevard was perhaps the grandest home on the block. And when the Woodses put it on the market, they had received multiple offers above their asking price. That led the Broaddus's to initially suspect that the Watcher might be somewhat upset over losing out on the house, but the Woodses said one interested buyer had backed out after a bad medical diagnosis. Well, another had already found a different home. In an email to the Broaddus's, Andrea Woods proposed another theory. Would the mention of the contractor trucks and your children suggest that it was someone in the neighborhood? The letters did indicate proximity. They had been processed in Kearney, the U.S. Postal Service's distribution center in northern New Jersey. The first was postmarked June 4th, before the sale was public. Woods's had never put up a for sale sign. Only a day after the contractors arrived, the renovations were mostly interior. And people who live nearby say they didn't notice an unusual commotion, even from the jackhammering in the basement. When Derek and Maria walked Detective Lugo around the house, they showed him that the easel on the porch was hidden from the street by vegetation, making it difficult to see unless someone was behind the house or right next door. A few days after the first letter, Maria and Derek went to the barbecue across the street, welcoming them and another new homeowner to the block. The Broaddus's hadn't told anyone about the Watcher, and the police had instructed, and found themselves scanning the party for clues while keeping tabs on their kids, who ran guilelessly through a crowd that made up much of the suspect pool. "We kept screaming at them to stay close," Maria said. "People must have thought we were crazy." At one point, Derek was chatting with John Schmidt, who lived two doors down, when Schmidt told him about the Langfords, who lived between them. Peggy Langford was in her 90s, and several of her adult children, all in their 60s, lived with her. "The family was a bit odd," Schmidt had said, "but harmless." He described one of the younger Langfords, Michael, who didn't work and had a beard like Ernest Hemingway, as kind of a Boo Radley character. Derek thought the case was solved. The Langford house was right next to the easel on the porch. The family had lived there since the 1960s, when the Watcher's father, the letters had said, had begun observing 657 Boulevard. Richard Langford, the family patriarch, had died 12 years earlier, and the Watcher claimed to have been on the job for the better part of 2 decades. When the Broaddus's told Lugo about the family, he said he already knew. And a week after the first letter arrived, he brought Michael Langford to police headquarters for an interview. Michael denied knowing anything about the letters, but the Broaddus's said that Lugo told them that the narrative of what he said matched things mentioned in the letters. "This isn't CSI Westfield," Lugo later told the Broaddus's. "When the wife is dead, it's the husband." But there wasn't much hard evidence, and after a few weeks, the police chief told the Broaddus's that, short of an admission, there wasn't much the department could do. "This is someone who threatened my kids, and the police are saying, probably nothing's going to happen," Derek said. "Probably isn't good enough for me." After the second letter, Derek told the cops that if they didn't take care of the situation, they would have a different kind of case on their hands. "This person attacked my family, where I'm from. If you do that, you get your butt beat," Derek told me. Frustrated, the Broaddus's began their own investigation. Derek became especially obsessed. He set up webcams in 657 Boulevard and spent nights crouched in the dark, watching to see if anyone was watching the house at close range. "Maria thought I was crazy," he told me recently at a coffee shop in Manhattan, where he covered a table with documents relating to the case, including copies of the letter, which he and his wife had shared only with a few few friends and family members. He showed me a map displaying when each of 657 Nivers had moved in. The Langfords were the only ones since the 60s, with overlays making possible sight lines for the easel and circle for approximate range of earshot to estimate who might have heard Maria yelling their kids' names. Only a few homes fit both criteria. The Broaddus's also turned to several experts. They employed a private investigator who staked out the neighborhood and ran background checks on the Langfords, but didn't find anything noteworthy. Derek reached out to a former FBI agent who served as the inspiration for Clara Starling in The Science of the Lambs. They were on a high school board of trustees together, and they also hired Robert Lenihan, another former FBI agent, to conduct a threat assessment. Lenihan recognized several old-fashioned ticks in the letters that pointed to an older writer. The envelope was addressed to M. M. Broaddus. The salutations included the day's weather, warm and humid, sunny and cool for a summer day, and the sentences had double spaces between them. The letters had a certain literary panache, which suggested a voracious reader, and a surprising lack of profanity, given the level of anger which Lenihan thought meant a less macho writer. Maybe, he wondered, the Watcher had seen the Watcher starring Keanu Reeves as a serial killer who stalks a detective trying to catch him. Lenihan didn't think the Watcher was likely to act on the threats, but the letters had enough typos and errors to imply a certain erraticism. The first letter was dated Tuesday, June 4th, but that day was a Wednesday. There was also a seething anger directed at the wealthy in particular. The Watcher was upset by new money moving into the town. Are you one of the Hoboken transplants who are running Westfield? Am I the Broaddus' relatively modest renovations? The house is crying from all the pain it's going through. You have changed it and made it so fancy. You are stealing its history. It cries for the past and what used to be in the time when I roamed its halls. The 1960s were a good time for 657 Boulevard when I ran from room to room imagining the life of the rich occupants there. The house was full of life and young blood. Then it got old, and so did my father, but he kept watching until the day he died. And now I watch and wait for the day when the young blood will be mine again. Lenihan recommended looking into former housekeepers or their descendants. Perhaps the Watcher was jealous of that the Broadduses had bought a home that the writer couldn't afford. But the focus remained on the Langfords. In cooperation with Westfield police, the Broadduses sent a letter to the Langfords announcing plans to tear down the house, hoping to prompt a response. Nothing happened. Detective Lugo brought Michael Langford in for a second interview, but got nowhere, and his sister, Abby, accused the police of harassing their family. Eventually, the Broadduses hired Lee Levitt, a lawyer who met with several members of the Langford family, as well as their attorney, to show them the letters, along with photos explaining how their home was one of the few vantage points from which the easel could be seen. The meeting grew tense, Levitt told me, and the Langfords insisted that Michael was innocent. One night, Derek had a dream in which he confronted Peggy, the eldest Langford, and demanded she build an 8-foot fence between the properties. Maria was having other kinds of dreams. One night, she woke up to an especially vivid one about a man who lived nearby. He was wearing these boots and carrying a pitchfork and calling to the kids, and I couldn't get to them in time, Maria said. She thought almost anyone could be the Watcher, which made daily life feel like navigating a labyrinth of threats. She probed the faces of shoppers at Trader Joe's to see if they looked strangely at her kids and spent hours Googling anyone who seemed suspicious. There were reasons considered other suspects. For one thing, the police spoke to Michael before the second letter was sent, which would make sending two more especially reckless. The Broadduses told Lugo... The Broadduses say that Lugo told them they wouldn't receive any more letters after he spoke to Michael. Then there was the rest of the neighborhood to consider. The private investigator found two child sex offenders within a few blocks. Bill Woodward, the Broadduses' house painter, had also noticed something strange. The couple behind 657 Boulevard kept a pair of lawn chairs stranger close to the Broadduses' property. One day, I was looking out the window, and I saw this older guy sitting in one of the chairs, Woodward told me. He wasn't facing his house. He was facing the Broadduses. But by the end of 2014, the investigation had stalled. The Watcher had left no digital trail, no fingerprints, and no way to place someone at the scene of a crime that could have been hatched from pretty much any mailbox in northern New Jersey. The letters could be read closely for possible clues or dismissed as the non-central ramblings of a sociopath. It was likely trying to find a needle in a haystack, said Scott Krause, who helped investigate the case for Union County Prosecutor's Office in December. The Westfield police told the Broadduses they had run out of options. Derek showed the letters to his priest, who agreed to bless the house. The renovations of 657 Boulevard, including a new alarm system, were finished within a few months, but the idea of moving in and filmed the Broadduses with an overwhelming anxiety. Could they let their kids play outside or have friends over? but they get a new letter every week. Derek Price out trained German Shepherds and posted a job on a website for military veterans. All you have to do is work out in the backyard every day. But the Broaddus had him bought 657 to feel bunkered in a fortress. At the end of the day, it came down to, what are you willing to risk, Maria told me. We weren't going to put our kids in harm's way. Derek had been one responding to occasional alarms at the house, sometimes in the middle of the night, bringing a knife with him just in case. They were so joyous about their new home, and then within days, they were petrified, Bill Woodward, the painter, said. I'm a stranger, and Maria was crying and shaking in my arms. It didn't help that the watcher seemed to be getting more and more unhinged. 657 Boulevard is turning on me. It is coming after me. I don't understand why. What spell did you cast on it? It used to be my friend, and now it is my enemy. I am in charge of 657 Boulevard. It is not in charge of me. I will fend off its bad things and wait for it to become good again. It will not punish me. I will rise again. I will be patient and wait for this to pass and for you to bring the young blood back to me. 657 Boulevard needs young blood. It needs you. Come back. Let the young blood play again like I once did. Let the young blood sleep in 657 Boulevard. Stop changing it and let it alone. The Broadduses had sold their old home, so they moved in with Maria's parents while continuing to pay mortgages and property taxes on 657 Boulevard. I had to do things like shovel the driveway, Derek said. Just picture that little indignity. I'd go at 5 in the morning, then come back and do it again at my in-laws. They told only a handful of friends about the letters, which left others to ask why they weren't moving in. Legal issues, they said, and wondered if they were getting divorced. They fought constantly and started taking medication to fall asleep. I was depressed wreck, Derek said. Maria decided to see a therapist after a routine doctor's visit that begins with the question, how are you, causing her to burst into tears. The therapist said she was suffering post-traumatic stress that wouldn't go away until they got rid of the house. 6 months after the letters arrived, the Broadduses decided to sell 657 Boulevard. They initially listed it for more than they paid to reflect the renovations they'd done, but few words are more gossipy than suburban New Jersey real estate, and rumors had already begun to swirl about why this house sat empty. One broker emailed to say that her client loved it, but that there are so many unsubstantiated rumors flying around, ranging from sexual predator to stalker, that they need to know more. The Broadduses sent a partial disclosure mentioning letters to interested buyers and told Coldwell Banker, their realtor, that they intended to show the full letters to anyone whose offer was accepted. Several preliminary bids came in well below the asking price, but the Broadduses weren't ready to take such a financial hit and only wanted to share the letters with likely buyers. No one got that far, even after they lowered the price. A Coldwell agent who hadn't read the letters told them in an email that they are being unnecessarily forthcoming. My friend got horrible threatening letters about her dog barking, and she didn't think to disclose, but the Broadduses insisted. I don't know how you lived through what we did and think you could do it to somebody else, Derek said. Derek and Maria thought about what they would have done had the previous owners told them about their letter from the Watcher. The Woodses, both retired scientists, told the Broadduses that they remembered the letter they received as more strange and then threatening. Thanking them for taking care of their house, they say they had never had any issues. We certainly never felt watched, Andrea told them. They rarely even locked the doors. But the Broadduses felt the name online was ominous enough to merit mentioning to a new family moving in and on June 2nd, 2015, a year after buying 657 Boulevard, they filed a legal complaint against the Woodses, arguing that the Woodses should have disclosed the letter just as they had the fact that water sometimes got in the basement. The Broadduses say they hope to reach a quiet settlement. Their kids still didn't know about the Watcher, and their lawyer suit assured them that at most a small legal news wire might pick up the story. We do some creepy stories, Cameron Hall said on the Today Show a few weeks later. This might be top 10 creepy. A local reporter had found the complaint, which included snippets of the Watcher's menacing threats, and after a belated attempt by the Broadduses to seal it, the story went viral. News trucks camped out at 657 Boulevard, and one local reporter set up a lawn chair to conduct his own watch. Broadus's got more than 300 media requests, but with the advice from crisis management consultant referred by one of Derek's colleagues, they decided not to speak publicly to spare their kids even more attention. They vacated Westfield and went to a friend's beach house. They didn't find much peace. Maria's grandfather had a heart attack, and the friend they were staying with had a grand mal seizure. Eventually, Derek and Maria sat down with their children to explain the real reasons they hadn't moved into their home. The kids had plenty of questions. Who is the Watcher? Where does this person live? Why is this person angry with us? To which Derek and Maria had few answers. Can you imagine having that conversation with a 5-year-old? Derek told me. Your town isn't as safe as you think it is, and there's a boogeyman obsessed with you. From a safer distance, the Watcher was a real-life mystery to solve. A commenter on NJ.com suggested ground-penetrating radar to find whatever the Watcher claimed was in the walls. The home inspector had already looked and told Derek the only issue was the aging home's lack of insulation. A group of Reddit users obsessed over the Google Maps Street View that showed a car parked in front of 657 that one user thought had a man holding a camera in the driver's seat. Others more rationally saw a pixelated glare. The range of proposed suspects included a jilted mistress, a spurred realtor, a local high schooler's creative writing project, a gorilla marketing for a horror movie, and mall goths having fun. Some people just thought the Broaduses were wimps for not moving in. I would never let this sicko stop me from moving into a house. Never back down from a terrorist, which irked the Broaduses. None of them have read the letters or had their children threatened by someone they didn't know, Derek said. To decide whether this person's only nuts enough to write these letters and not to do something, what if something did happen? In Westfield, people were on edge. Lori Clancy, who teaches piano lessons in her house behind 657 Boulevard, told me one of her students came for a lesson shortly after the news of the Watcher broke and started bawling. She was terrified to walk down the boulevard, Clancy said. At the first Westfield Town Council meeting after the letters became public, Mayor Andy Skibitzky assured the public that the Watcher hadn't been heard from in a year and that even though the police hadn't solved the case, their investigation had been exhaustive. This was news to 657's neighbors, most of whom have never heard from the cops. We are confounded as to how a thorough investigation can be conducted without talking to all the neighbors with proximity to the home. Several of them wrote a letter to the new local paper. Under the glare of national attention, Baron Chambliss, a veteran detective in the Westfield Police, was asked to look at the case. The Broaduses are victims, and I don't think they got the supports they needed, Chambliss, who has since retired, told me recently in the initial investigation. Chambliss knew his colleagues had looked closely at Michael Langford. According to his brother Sandy Langford, Michael had been diagnosed with schizophrenia as a young man. He sometimes spooked newcomers to the neighborhood when he did strange things, like walk through their backyard or peek into the windows of homes that were being renovated. But those who knew him told me that the odd things he did were mostly just unusual neighborly kindnesses. He goes out and gets newspapers for me every morning, said John Schmidt, who lives next door. People who had known Michael for decades told me they didn't think he was capable of writing the letters. As Chambliss looked into the case, he discovered something surprising. Investigators had eventually conducted a DNA analysis of one of the envelopes and determined that the DNA belonged to a woman. Chambliss decided to look more closely at Abby Langford, Michael's sister, who worked as a real estate agent. When she was upset about missing a commission right next door, she also worked at the local Lord and Taylor, and Chambliss coordinated with a security guard there to nab a plastic water bottle during a shift. But Chambliss says the DNA sample was not a match. Not long after, the prosecutor's office gave Derek and Maria some unexpected news. They wouldn't say why or how, but they ruled out the Langfords as suspects. The Broaduses were stunned. They had recently told the prosecutors that they planned to file civil charges against the Langfords and wondered if the prosecutors were lying to prevent the story from blowing up again. My family moved to the Boulevard in 1961, and we never caused a problem for anybody, Sandy Langford told me. This guy gets all these letters, and all of a sudden people are pointing fingers. Left without a suspect, the Broaduses reopened their personal investigation. They were still coy about sharing too much with their neighbors, who remained in the pool of suspect. but spent an afternoon walking the block with a picture of the Watcher's handwritten envelope. They hoped someone might recognize the writing from a Christmas card, but the only notable encounter came when an older man who lived behind 657 said his son joked that the Watcher sounded a little bit like him. A neighbor across the street was the CEO of Kroll, the security firm, and the Brosses hired the company to look for handwriting matches. But they found nothing, and also hired Robert Leonard, a renowned forensic linguist, the former member of the band Sha-Na-Na, who didn't find any noteworthy overlap when he sourced local online forums for similarities to the Watcher's handwriting. Although he did think that the author might watch Game of Thrones, Jon Snow is one of the Watchers on the Wall, at one point, Derek persuaded a friend in tech to connect him to a hacker willing to try breaking into Wi-Fi networks in the neighborhood to look for incriminating documents. But doing so turned out to be both illegal and more difficult than the movies made it seem. So they didn't go through with it. Chambliss and the Westfield police were also back at square one. The cops asked Andrea Woods for a DNA sample and interviewed her 21-year-old son, who was surprised to find that he suddenly seemed to be a suspect. A year after the fact, it was hard to find fresh leads, and the initial police canvas had been so porous that it missed a significant clue. Around the same time the Broadduses had received their first letter, another family on the Boulevard got a similar note from the Watcher. The parents of that family had lived in the house for years, and their kids were grown, so they threw away the letter just as the Woodses had, but after the news broke, one of their children posted about it on Facebook, then deleted the post. When the investigator spoke to the family, they confirmed that the letter had been similar to the Brosses, but its existence only made the case more confusing. There wasn't a lot to go on, Chambliss told me. One night, Chambliss and a partner were sitting in the back of a van parked on the boulevard, watching the house through a pair of binoculars. Around 11 p.m., a car stopped in front of the house long enough for Chambliss to grow suspicious. He says he traced the car to a young woman in a nearby town whose boyfriend lived on the same block as 657. The woman told Chambliss her boyfriend was into some really dark video games, including Chambliss's memory, one in which he was playing as a specific character, the Watcher. As for the female DNA, Chambliss figured the girlfriend or someone else could have helped. The boyfriend was living elsewhere at the time, but Chambliss says he agreed to come in for an interview or two separate occasions. He didn't show up either time. Chambliss didn't have enough evidence to compel him to appear, and with the media attention dying down, he dropped the case and moved on. While the Broadduses continued to be consumed by stress and fear for the rest of Westfield, the story became little more creep than a creepy urban legend. A house to walk by at Halloween if you were brave enough. No one who lived in the house before the Woodses could recall anything unusual, and it's hard for people to imagine that their idyllic neighborhood could host something so sinister. A woman who lives nearby told me that after the news broke, she and 10 or so of her neighbors had gathered in the street, puzzled at who might have sent the letters. Eventually, she said, they came to contentions. Maybe the Broadduses had sent the letters to themselves. The theory, so far as it went, was the Broadduses had suffered buyer's remorse or realized they couldn't afford the home and concocted an elaborate scheme to get out of the sale. Or Derek was cooking up some kind of insurance fraud. Or they were angling for a movie deal. The Broadduses received several offers but turned them down. Lifetime eventually released a movie called The Watcher, despite a cease and desist letter from the Broadduses arguing that the couple in its movie was biracial, and the letters were signed The Raven. Some locals found it noteworthy that over the course of a decade, the Broadduses had upgraded from a $315,000 house to a $770,000 house to a $1.3 million house and refinanced their mortgages. A few weeks after the letters became public, the Westfield Leader published an article in which anonymous neighbors were quoted asking why the Broadduses kept renovating a home they weren't moving into, or questioning whether they had really done that much renovating at all. The leader even cast doubt on Maria's commitment to her family's safety, citing as the evidence the fact that she had a public Facebook page with a photo of her kids. The paper did note that the police had tested Maria's DNA and it didn't match. None of the theories made much logical sense. The Broadduses had answers to every question. How does someone go from a $300,000 house to a $1.3 million house in 10 years, Derek told me. It's America. But they weren't speaking publicly, and the rumors persisted. One Boulevard resident wrote a letter to the editor arguing that an elaborate scheme is underway to defraud the Woods family for millions of dollars. Chambliss told me Westfield cops even bought into the theory. There are even more skeptics online. I live in a neighboring town. If these levers have been happening for a while, there's no doubt in my mind that it would have made a public way. It would have made it public way before this, Lord Fluffernutter said on Reddit. This seems scam. So, who is the Watcher? Is the Watcher real, or is it all fake?